Welcome to Seagull Eagle Podcast, the show that really shouldn't work,
but somehow it absolutely does. One Palace fan, one Brighton fan, neighbours, rivals, and proof that football makes grown men make very strange life choices.
In this week's episode, transfer rumours, dream signings, and new targets for both clubs. Plus, we review who's staying and who's going in Fight or Flight.
So let's get into it before Neil finds another reason to kick Palace out of Europe. This is Seagull Eagle. Oh, have you had a good week, Neil?
Yes, mate. Pretty good week. Thank you very much. How about you? How are you doing? You're a little bit worse for wear, aren't you?
I'm all right. Just a nice little bout of man flu today. But it's going to be all right. I've had a little afternoon nap today. So,
oh, bless you.
Yeah, probably a little bit more hoarse than I normally am. So it's my turn to sound like absolute rubbish on a podcast today.
Well, speaking of podcasts, last week we were talking a lot about, you know what, Palace, Europa League, Brighton sneaking in, you know.
Oh, you're quick to bring this up today, aren't you?
Absolutely. Well, the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's still rumbling on.
Yeah. Yeah, fueled by Brighton fans again.
Oh, come on.
Sponsored by Brighton fans.
You can't say it's fueled by Brighton fans when The Athletic, Sky Sports News, everyone's on it now, aren't they? We were ahead, obviously. We brought it to you first here on Seagull Eagle.
Mm.
But now it seems to be pretty common knowledge what's going on.
Yeah, when I say fueled by Brighton fans, I think it's all over my social media.
Ah, I see.
And 9 times out of 10, it's a really enthusiastic Brighton fan on TikTok superimposed over, UEFA's rules, like that green screen thing with UEFA's rules here. And they're all going, we're getting our rightful place in Europe. It's like, no, your rightful place in Europe would have come to you if you'd have done better.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
It's as simple as that, right? And also, genuinely do not think this is going to happen. But should we talk about it?
I mean, I suppose we should. I think anyone that listened to the last couple of episodes, anyone that's seen the news recently or any of the news articles probably understands the basics of what it is. But how do you want to approach this? Are we any closer to getting a decision or any sort of understanding?
I don't think there's been too much update since last week. There's been a few bits that have trickled through.
Mm.
But again, no one's actually made a statement here.
Yep.
So there's a lot of, is all this just clickbait? Is it people fueling it or whatever? What I do think's potentially changed is that we did say about the draw, that they're potentially making a decision before the draw. And that's something that I'm hearing quite a lot now. A lot of the media are saying by the end of June, but I think that we'll get some form of decision by the 17th of June, because that's the date that the draw is happening.
Yeah, that's the first draw, isn't it? Because that's for the qualifying rounds, as it were. Now, to be correct here, Palace are not included in that, are they? Because they're straight through to the group stages anyway.
Correct.
There's a lot of difference of opinions, obviously. There are a lot of people, as you just said, are saying it probably has to be done before that starts. And I think that's what UEFA suggested beforehand. But then I read a story yesterday from The Athletic, who were saying that they're starting to feel, and the BBC copied onto this as well, that they're starting to feel that maybe the end of the month, because the qualifying doesn't impact Crystal Palace or anyone else that would take their place, that actually probably nearer the end of the month a decision might be made. I mean, ultimately, I don't see how long it takes to make a decision. We all know the ins and outs of this. And I mean, we were talking about this off air, weren't we? And saying about what options are there for the Palace board to come up with, in particular, obviously, Eagle Holdings. But what sort of options have they got, Andy? Do you know?
Reports have suggested this week that after that first meeting where they met with UEFA, and supposedly, it's been reported that the outcome is that Palace suggested that they could put their Textor could put his share into a blind trust, right? Which was something we talked about in the previous weeks.
Yeah.
Something that both the guy from Nottingham Forest and also Man United have done in the past.
Mm.
Now, we've now apparently been told after this meeting that the blind trust thing is not doable because we've missed the deadline.
But the deadline was like back in March, wasn't it?
Yep. So the deadline was on March the 1st. So, Neil, to put this into perspective, for a team like, I don't know, Forest, Man City, you know, any of the other big clubs, there would have been a really clear indication by March the 1st whether potentially they would be playing in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
For example, they would be a team potentially who have this run rate of playing in Europe every year. Therefore, yep. they would have their house in order. Or yep. we would have been on the cusp of the European places. And there would have been an option to go, do you know what? Let's make sure that we comply with something that we think might happen. Mm. That March the 1st. So let me take you back in time, Neil.
Mm.
March the 1st was the day that we were about to play Millwall in the fifth round of the FA Cup. That very day,
yeah.
sitting in 12th place in the Premier League, and the Millwall keeper was just about to commit attempted murder on Mateta. Can you remember back all them days?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So Mateta didn't have his silly head mask on or anything like that at that time, because a lot has happened since then, right? We're in the fifth round of the FA Cup, right? So now the question I have is this. Why would the owners of a club such as Crystal Palace make the decision to put their shares of the club into a blind trust, sitting 12th in the Premier League, about to play the fifth round of the FA Cup, not even won the fifth round of the FA Cup, about to play the fifth round of the FA Cup? The answer of that, Neil, is you wouldn't.
No, I totally agree with you, actually.
Having never won anything in their entire history of the club of any substance, having never made it into Europe apart from being invited into the Intertoto Cup and then us putting our second team out back in whenever it was, there is no reason why anyone would have thought that we have got to comply with these ridiculous rules.
Yeah.
So then also you take into account that Textor was in discussions about his stake at Crystal Palace at that point. It's been widely reported that Textor was unhappy with the amount of authority he's got at the club, right? Mm-hmm. He's, you know, a lot of media outlets this week have kind of been stating that he's got the most expensive season ticket at Palace, implying that he's got no more sway in what goes on than I do, in that essence, because there's three other people and he's only got one quarter of the say. So if he wants to do something, he can't do it unless he gets two others, in essence, to agree with him. So the fact that he was in discussions at that time when UEFA are saying you should have put your stuff into a blind trust, you should have complied.
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute. Not only did we not think we were going to be here, because it's never happened and that was a fairy tale. Also, this guy was trying to buy more of the club because he wanted more control.
Mm.
So there's loads of quotes which you can openly see out there saying that this isn't part, he doesn't feel that this is working under this arrangement because the club is part of the Eagle Group, but it's not operating as a multi-club model.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
an independent club with someone who has shares via the Eagle Group. So where we're at here is that he just lost his opportunity to buy Everton. He was in talks about the other owners of buying them out. Something, of course, that Parrish and the rest of the board completely did not agree on.
Mm.
Right? So how do you put your shares in a blind trust if you're looking to sell them?
I mean, that's a side point in my opinion, because that was just something that was going on anyway. And I think your point, the absolute most important point for any Crystal Palace fan, is that the deadline, as you said, was 1st of March. You were in the fifth round of the FA Cup. And then the miracle happened. You end up winning the FA Cup. There must be another way around this for UEFA, because there's going to be clubs like this, hopefully, in the future. Things like this will happen again, where someone who wasn't expecting to be in Europe suddenly get into Europe, and these things will happen. There's other examples of other teams doing this type of thing, and they've proved longer term, I granted, but they've proved that they aren't they've proved that they're not being run as the same clubs. And that's obviously Manchester City and Girona the last couple of seasons. Obviously, you've got other clubs that are doing that as well. Now, I think the thing for me, and the reason why I'm not personally getting too excited, I love to wind you up, but ultimately, I'm not getting too excited, is because it just doesn't make sense. this is a one-off, or, you know, a near on one-off for a club that wasn't expecting to win anything. It's won something. So quite rightly, you're absolutely on the money. Why on the 1st of March would you, as a club owner, expect to be in Europe when you're 12th in the league and in the fifth round of the FA Cup? It makes no sense whatsoever. So there has to be a workaround for it, which is why maybe they're taking to the end of the month to make those decisions. We don't know, obviously, but maybe that's why they're trying to work out a way around it. But it's so much going on, isn't there?
Oh, and I think, do you know what? You just touched on a really good point there, which is that UEFA have apparently told Palace that there is no flexibility, was the words that keep going around on this deadline. But if this is the case, Neil, right, let's just put this into perspective, which is kind of going back onto your point. If a spot in the Europa...
Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Europa League is the coveted prize for winning, let's be honest, probably the oldest cup in England and potentially one of the most prestigious
in the world.
The point of the FA Cup and the reason why it is the most prestigious in potentially the world is because of the fundamental fact that any team in the UK has got the chance to win it. Regardless of how big, how small, what league you play in, who you're owned by, whatever it would be, you can win that cup and create magic and create a future for yourself. It's like that American dream or whatever it would be. Do you know what I mean? It's the chance to do good things. So therefore, saying that then, putting a March the 1st deadline only benefits the big clubs under that situation, right? Only assumes that competition is a farce, and therefore the likes of Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, anyone else who would already be in Europe would get that place. So I just don't. I think it's an archaic rule and something that isn't good for competition. Right?
I disagree. I think the rule is absolutely fine. I think the deadline is the issue.
Yes.
So I think the rule is fine, and I back the rule, the concept of the rule of not having people owning two clubs in the same competition. I think most people would say that makes sense because there could be problems with that in the future. Mm-hmm. So I understand why the rules come in. The issue I have with it only is purely the fact that I think probably more the FA rather than UEFA haven't thought about this and haven't suggested when they're giving the FA Cup a place in the Europa League, which is the FA Cup's decision, not UEFA's done this. This is the British, the English FA that have decided who gets European places. Then that is the issue. They haven't thought this through. And if anything, what this is doing is this is setting a precedent, and this is maybe the reason why a law might be changed later on, or a decision might be changed, a rule or whatever. Unfortunately for Crystal Palace, they're the ones that are finding the problem. So they're the first ones going through this issue. So how is it going to work out? How is it going to be done? Well, it's too late for the FA to do anything about it now. So now it's over to UEFA, and UEFA are having to deal with the problem. What will happen? I mean, honestly, who knows? I personally still don't think anything will change. I think they'll work out a way somehow, whether that be John Textor and his ownership shares, or whether that be UEFA letting both of them in the same competition, I don't know.
But there is the rule book, right? There's the rule book, and we have to abide by the rule book. And I absolutely understand that. I think if you take the news and the speculation outside of that, it's Palace's job right now, and probably the hundreds of lawyers and all of the other people that are now involved in this and costing us a fortune, to prove that we do comply with them rules. And I think that is our main focus now, to prove that we do not operate as part of a multi-club model, even though the Eagle Group looks like it's a multi-club model, like the likes of Man City, Brighton, like you did when you went into to the league, when you had other clubs that you owned and you swapped multiple players. I think 14 players went between clubs when you
Saw this online the other day. So yeah, that's Union Saint-Gerloise, which is the current Belgian champions. We loaned players to either side and that was mostly work permit issues, basically. Yeah. And we used that as a feeder club, basically.
And this is my point, though, that part of the multi-club model that you operate, and Man City operates, and a lot of the other teams like Nottingham Forest operate, where they have they share lots and lots of different things, like players, staff, databases, scouting networks, all the other bits and pieces. Yeah. We don't do any of that.
In fact, I totally get you.
Bit of business, Neil, that's been done between Palace and Lyon was for a young defender that we sold to them for like £3 million a few years ago.
Yeah.
And they and Lyon, and that was before Textor even came into place, by the way. And then Lyon ended up selling him for £25 million. So in fact, the actual model has not done us any favours. They've made money out of us.
Yeah, look, there's nothing wrong with having multi-club ownership. There's nothing wrong with what Brighton have done. There's nothing wrong with what Palace, Lyon, anyone else. There's nothing wrong with that because the rules are there. They're very clear. The issue here isn't about multi-club ownership. I know you're trying to prove, not you personally, but Palace are trying to prove there's no ownership or there's no sort of majority decision maker here. And I get that. But ultimately, the simplest fix in all of this is simply UEFA go, we appreciate you didn't know on the 1st of March because you hadn't known you were going to be in Europe at that point. As you now know, we'd like you to put your ownership into a blind trust, please. And that's it. Just forget the 1st of March. Just say that the deadline is 2 days' time. Put yourself in a blind trust. Done. Job. Move on. That's all they need to do.
But they've said that they're not going to do that.
And so that's the question, isn't it? Why are they doing that? Are they trying to make an example out of Palace? Well, there's no example out of Palace because Palace didn't have a clue, as we've just talked about for the last 10 minutes, about what they were going to be doing come, you know, May time. So,
do you know what I think, Neil?
Go on.
I think that they're not trying to make an example out of us. I think they're trying to make an example out of all the other clubs that have potentially worked their way around the rules by them saying, do you know what, we'll put our stuff...
But that's my point. They're making an example out of Palace. That's my point. Because they can't touch anyone else.
No, of course. But I think what they're trying to do is actually say, like, from the clubs like yourself and Man City and the others that have gone, oh, we'll put our stuff in a blind trust. We've got no authority on that. However, you've still got two clubs that are competing in the same competition. All of that stuff still stands, but you've just done a bit of paperwork that means that that's not a thing anymore. And I think maybe what they've realised is that the whole thing's become a bit of a farce. However, what we don't know is the situation. And for me, I think the crux of all of this argument is going to be what is on that shareholders agreement at Crystal Palace. Only the shareholders know that. What is there to prove that it will be compliant or not? Crystal Palace seem to be reasonably confident about this. There is also reports in the last couple of days, actually, and even in the last couple of hours, Neil, about the fact that some of our other owners are looking to try and buy Textor out.
Mm.
But a quick sale seems incredibly unlikely and would probably not help our situation right now. Textor has potentially offered to resign as a director.
Mm.
So I think that there is a few things that might happen there, but I don't think any of them are going to happen. You know how long it takes to even do the simplest thing in business. So our best hope is going to be to persuade them that Textor has no influence at Palace, which is common knowledge to everybody.
It's
and even the haters of Palace out there are aware of that fact. So let's see.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you just said there. Just to make a couple of clarifications, Tony Bloom, the owner of Brighton Hove Albion, he was the majority shareholder in that Belgian club that we're talking about until the season came where we were looking like we were going to be in Europe. He then, before the deadline, changed his shareholdership to a minority stakeholder. So he doesn't own the club anymore. He is now a minority. Just I want to make that clear so that we're not saying that Brighton are made the rules up or anything. They complied with the rules, but they knew, because they were the league position, they knew that there was a chance that they were going to be in Europe. That's why they did it. Palace didn't get that opportunity. So,
but I guess the point being, though, that at no point was I suggesting, by the way, here that Brighton didn't stick to the rules, right? Because that's not what I was saying. I think what my argument was that Brighton in the past have stuck to the rules and they played the game like the likes of Man City and so on because they've read the rule book and they've had the hindsight to be able to read the rule book.
But they had the hindsight only because their European position they could plan for, because they were in the league in the 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd, 7th. They were floating around that place.
Yeah.
Palace didn't get that opportunity. That's why I'm with you on this one.
Yeah.
You know, something has to be done. And I think that's the issue with the FA, that maybe in the future they're going to have to look at that. But for right now, and the Palace situation, it rumbles on.
And it's just, it's not good for anybody apart from Brighton fans who love the demise of Palace potential and just love the fact that you can right the wrong of the fact that we took your European place away from you, which is what I keep seeing online. We didn't take your place away from you, Brighton fans. You took it away yourself by going on that awful run earlier on in the season. I'm gutted for you, because actually the truth of the matter is that if we hadn't won the FA Cup, you would be in the Conference League right now, right? And that is the situation. So I understand the bitterness. However, we did earn the right to play in Europe.
Of course you did.
So,
absolutely. Yeah.
And you would have if we hadn't have won the FA Cup. Oh, and that's how it works. But listen, Neil, to end this now, because I'm getting wound up.
Okay, mate. Okay.
Getting wound up.
Sorry.
If Forest take our spot and Brighton get into the Conference League, I'm cancelling my summer, Neil. And this podcast, okay, will probably be rebranded, I reckon, as Flying High and Dragged Along. Can you imagine me sat here next season in this state of mind reviewing Brighton versus FC Tractor of Azerbaijan in the Conference League? No thanks, mate.
So what have I got to do then next season? I've got to sit here and cope with it as well, have I? The other way around?
You know why? Because we deserved it, because we won the FA Cup, Neil. To be honest with you, I would rather them do this podcast next year reviewing Brighton in the Conference League. I'd rather polish every seat in the Arthur Waite stand with a toothbrush, mate. And that is a dirty stand. I just can't. Do you know what? The thought of doing this podcast is as bad as the thought of the whole situation in itself next year with your smug little face looking at me reviewing, you know, you going to the Faroe Islands and playing the team out there. I guess the only benefit to that would be it's not the Europa League. It would be, you know.
Still Europe though, isn't it, mate?
Just about. It's the one that West Ham won though, isn't it? I mean,
I'm going to. Yeah, fair point.
Also, do you know what really excited me actually?
Go on.
Last thing, that I watched something, it was only about an hour before I came over actually, after I kind of worked out what I was going to say and all this. And then obviously I was checking that what I was about to say was right. Mm. And the guy from Sky basically put the same argument pretty much together as me. And he finished it by going, it would be a massive travesty of justice, not only for Crystal Palace and their fans, and there would be absolute uproar. Remember, by the way, what it was like when we nearly went out of business, when we marched upon Lloyds Bank.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine? I mean, who are we marching upon? I mean, where's that going? Anyway, yeah. So you
Been
can
there,
imagine,
mate.
You can imagine the uproar. But also, the thing that I really liked about that was that he mentioned about the fact that Glasner had won the Europa League before. And he also said that he was backing us to win the Europa League. And that having Palace in that competition would be a benefit to everybody and the fairy tale of that league as a whole, that we'd never won anything, we've won the FA Cup, and we're going into the Europa League to create a story. So UEFA, if you are listening, don't ruin it. Don't ruin the fairy tale.
Don't listen to him, UEFA. Ruin it, please. Right, should we move on?
I think we should.
So what else has been going on? Oh, did you see the epic, fantastic, wonderful game of football that was England versus Andorra yesterday, which was Saturday, by the way, for the you listeners listening out there?
So, Neil, I didn't. And there was a really legitimate reason for that. Wasn't feeling too great yesterday. And I had a little sleep and I woke back up from a sleep and I went, oh, I'm going to watch the last 20 minutes of the England game.
Sure.
I then went through the 164 different channels of sport that I have available to me on a paid subscription, just to clarify, and I couldn't find it. You then informed me 20 minutes ago that it was actually on ITV. So it would have been quite easy to have watched. I did try. So I've got no idea, really. I know what happened, but
yeah,
I didn't watch it.
I mean, you didn't miss much. So Andorra nil, England won. I mean, you know, it's great that we won. It's fantastic against the mighty Andorra. Match stats, right? Listen to this. I love
Go
this.
On.
Right. Guess how much percentage England had in possession.
Right. How much yeah. England had? Yeah. Well, I would go like 85%.
Oh, good guess. 83% okay. possession. Right, we had 20 shots, 10 of them on target. They had 4 shots altogether. Oh. Yeah. None on target. No, you know, nothing happened.
Stats would be about right then.
They would be about right.
A good performance.
Well, no.
It wasn't though.
They would be right in the sense of the amount of chances that we had.
Yeah.
But when you watch the game, it was such a bore fest. It was awful, honestly awful. The only highlight from this podcast perspective was that Eze got on in the second half for the last, I think, 20 odd minutes.
Yeah, and apparently he was lively, right?
He was lively, yeah, absolutely. But it was a really boring game. I don't even want to talk about it too much. I just think the only thing I would say is you're absolutely right. When Eze came on, he looked a bit bright. He had a header that he almost scored from. Really good save, to be fair, from the keeper. But, I mean, I'm hoping that the friendly against Senegal on Tuesday is going to be a bit brighter and a bit more fun to watch, especially because Senegal have got a few of our players, haven't they? We can talk about that in a moment.
Wasn't it, though, that our new manager, isn't he the first New England manager to win his first 3 games?
I mean, he is, but
that's a crappy start in itself, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, we haven't played anyone. Do you know what I mean? It's been awful, really, in that sense.
Well, I guess at least, do you know what, though? I think this is the point, and we should know this, supporting our clubs, that a win's a win.
There were some other internationals, though, weren't there?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, we are blessed these days, Neil, aren't we? Mm. That we've got a good sprinkling of talent across the world, in fact. And a lot of them are in the first team. So do you want to kick it off then? Who have you had?
Well, I mean, I think in total, I counted there's something like 15 senior men's players on duty in their countries, like all over the world, as it were, this week. So we've got quite a big Dutch contingent, as you can imagine. Jean-Paul Van Heck, Mats Wiefer, Kel Sherpin, which you probably don't know, is one of our many goalkeepers we've got on our books.
Okay.
He's been on loan the last couple of seasons, but they were all called up to the Netherlands team. They had a couple of friendlies against Finland yesterday, I think it was, and Malta next week as well. JP did get a start for the game against Finland alongside Virgil van Dijk. I do worry that may be a future pairing in the league at some point as well. That's concerning me a little bit. But
if they get their checkbook out, you're known for it, aren't you?
No. South America, we had quite a few players there as well. Obviously, they do their World Cup qualifying slightly different. They have one big league of 10 teams. Ecuador, so Purvis, Estepinian, they faced Brazil. Ancelotti's first game as Brazil manager as well, don't forget. And nice, exciting 0-0. They did well. Diego Gomez and Julio Enciso for Paraguay. They played against Uruguay on Friday night and beat them 2-0. And Enciso scoring the penalty near the end of the game. And that's pretty much them fairly guaranteed now qualification for the World Cup, so that's good for them. There was quite a few other players, as I said, a total of 15 senior men's players playing in different games over this week. But the only one I wanted to sort of pick up on, or a couple I wanted to pick up on, are one, Yasin Ayari, who I spoke about last week.
Yep.
He's playing for Sweden now, and he actually scored on Friday night, I think it was, against Hungary. A nice little goal from pressure on the keeper and picked the ball off them and scored. So good for him. Nice to see him get on the score sheet. There's quite a few other little games, but I think that was the ones I just wanted to call out. Actually, Abdelassima, right? This is a player that you may not even have heard of, but he's been on loan. We bought him ages ago, and he's been on loan constantly. He went to Rangers, had a couple of really good seasons. He's been in France a couple of times. He's never played for the Albion yet. I imagine we're going to run out of contract time eventually, and he's just going to disappear. But I really like him as a player. He's a fast forward.
Okay.
He plays for Senegal as well. So he played against Republic of Ireland. We'll probably see him play against England as well. So you might get to see him. One of your boys plays for Senegal, don't they?
Yeah, Sarr.
Yeah. So hopefully we might get to see Sima and Sarr on Tuesday night when they play England. What about Palace? They had quite a few people out as well, didn't they?
Well, we have. We've had lots and lots and lots. And I guess before we go into that, I just wanted to touch on Adam Wharton, because we spoke about him last week, didn't we?
Oh, yes.
The fact that he missed out on the senior team. And he was named in the under-21 squad. He was set to attend training at St George's Park this week. But further update from England on Friday confirmed that he's not going to join up with the squad. So I can only assume that is still due to his concussion situation that he had at Wembley, and is not feeling it.
I mean, that's a bit worrying, isn't it?
A little bit.
Because that was quite a few weeks ago now.
Three.
Hopefully it was just precautionary and they're just not bothering. They don't want to make any problems. But yeah, I mean, get well soon, Adam. I hope it all works out. I sincerely do, because I really do hope to see him in an England shirt soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, yes, you mentioned Sarr earlier. He scored for Senegal against the Republic of Ireland in that game you were just mentioning on Friday, which finished 1-1. Do you know Senegal are now unbeaten in their last 21 matches?
I didn't know that, actually. Blimey, really?
Yep. I know. I was like, that's an interesting stat. I'm going to try and break that stat. And I couldn't. It's a genuine stat. And obviously, they've got a trip to face England on Tuesday night. So let's hope we do break that stat on Tuesday night. Kamada, my good friend Kamada, who I've got a lot of love for these days, captained Japan against Australia. They lost 1-0, but it don't matter because they'd already won their group, so that's fine.
Yeah, I think Mitoma was rested for that one as well because of that.
Because of his transfer ahead.
Shut it.
Munez and Lerma were in action for Colombia against Peru, which ended up in a thrilling 0-0. Chris Richards and Matt Turner were both called up for the USA. Matt Turner did a bit of bench warming as an unused substitute, as do most goalkeepers these days. But Chris Richards, he played a full 90 minutes, but they lost 2-1 to Turkey.
Right.
Got a lot of love for Chris Richards. What a great player. And then here's someone else who I think a lot of at the moment, who is having a great year, is Justin Devenny.
Oh, yeah.
We spoke about him the other week.
Is he an international now?
Mate, he's had an absolute cracking year. So he retained his starting position. He got a call up for Northern Ireland, and he's kind of done one or two appearances, and he started his previous game, and he's retained his starting position, playing left wing back, which is not the position he plays at Palace. And he impressed with his energy and up and down on that side of the pitch. He got player of the match. They lost 2-1. But he was player of the match, and he's had a really, really good write-up. So fair play to that young kid. And if you look at him close up, he looks like a 12-year-old. I'm not even joking. If you put a school blazer on him, you'd quite easily let him on the bus for kids' rate.
I think that's just a sign of us getting older, mate.
Yeah, I don't know. He is just, you're right, no, he is. But you know, he's a young lad and he's doing great things. Imagine, you know, what he's going through at the moment, right? He just won the FA Cup and he played a genuine role in that, scoring goals and all sorts. He's got Palace's highest ever league total, and he's now a fully capped player for his team and getting accolades. I mean, good on him.
Yeah, playing for your country is the ultimate.
Yeah. Right, welcome to another round of Fight or Flight, the part of the pod where we step into imaginary power suits and make some big calls on who stays and who goes. Have you got your suit on, Neil?
Yeah, I'm all ready. I'm ready for my new role as a board director.
Like it. Well, I mean, there's potentially a position at Palace for a new one.
You're all right.
This week we're asking, do we lock the gates and beg them to stay, or do we politely book them a one-way ticket to Anywhere FC with a nice handwritten note and maybe some airport snacks? So don't forget, we're looking at form, contract value, future promise, and how much their departure would ruin our week before, of course, we deliver our final verdict. Both clubs, of course, have got a few names on the edge at the moment. We're going to focus on a different one each week. Nothing's happened since last week on the two that we already discussed, I don't believe.
That's right. So last week we talked about Karo Mitoma and
Eze.
That's right. So it's been a quiet week, thankfully, but I'm sure it will heat up eventually. But if you want to listen to that, go back to the previous episode and you can listen to our verdicts on those guys. This week, who are we going to be talking about for Palace?
The one, the only, Jean-Philippe Mateta. Fantastique.
The Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
See what I did there? Because he's got the mask on his...
No. It's on his ears, though.
Oh, is it? Oh,
okay. Not on his eye.
All right, forget that then.
Yeah. Okay.
What about him?
So, let's just recap on the wonder of Jean-Philippe Mateta.
Go on then.
Let's be honest. If you add a guy of his stature and his performance in previous Palace teams. All of the stories and all the media and all the hype would have been about that one player.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in the days of, I don't know, Andy Johnson, Matt Janssen, and, you know, lots of the other superstars up front, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because we've got other good players now, I feel like he doesn't go under the radar, don't get me wrong, but I think he's not the only one at the club. So last year, he scored 17 goals in all competitions, 4 assists, 37 goal involvements in the Premier League in the last 2 seasons.
Really?
That is epic. Probably, in my opinion, and I am biased, one of the best number 9s in the Premier League.
I'm glad you said in my opinion.
All right, I've got a question for you, Neil.
Go on, mate.
Would you take Mateta?
No.
Are you joking?
No. He plays for Palace, I wouldn't touch him with a barge pole.
Yeah. Okay, here we go then.
Okay, go on.
If he wasn't a Palace player...
I understand what you're saying. He is incredibly powerful. He's strong. If we were to change our playing style, I would definitely think about it. But the way we play now, no, I wouldn't touch him.
Nah, but he would make your club better, right?
I almost fell into that trap.
We'll carry on. Look, let's just recap here, right? He cost the club £15 million back in 2021. He came from the German club Mainz after a loan deal. And that was an ongoing saga in itself back in the day there, because this loan deal, he did all right, but he weren't doing great.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, Mateta, it's all about Edouard back in them days, believe it or not. He was doing better back under the Hodgson system. And
was he the guy that in the Brighton Palace game at the Amex, when Brighton were all over Palace, he scored that last minute, like right up the other end, and they just scored the second goal or whatever it was. Was that him?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yeah.
And then he also did this thing where twice when we were about to send him back on and not extend the loan or not trigger any of the kind of the bolt-ons, as it were, just before, like the game before we had to make that decision, he'd kind of come alive in a cup game and score a hat trick or something. And I remember there'd be so many times where we were like, nah, not for us.
Mm.
Do you know why? Because we weren't playing his game. And I think this is the point now where he's come alive and everyone's like, I think there's not even any talk about Edouard now, because obviously he's gone off to Leicester and not even got a start over at Leicester.
Mm.
And now he's technically back again. So poor old Edouard. But anyway, look, we triggered his 12-month extension on his contract. He is, Neil, I'm proud to say, currently in talks about a new contract with the club. We're looking to extend his contract on improved terms. And I've heard that we are heading in the right direction and a deal is close.
So to be clear, he's currently got 2 years left because you've already extended the current contract
for
12 months because there was a trigger on it.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about maybe a new contract that would obviously take him further than 2 years, maybe another two or whatever. So possibly 4 or 5 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, let's all be honest here. Mateta, as I just said to you, and is being touted as one of the best number nines. Not the best, to clarify, one of the best, right? We all know who the best ones are.
No,
right?
I get you.
But he's up there now in terms of stats.
Yeah.
If you look at his stats since Glasner came in,
yeah,
there are actually only two, which we all know about, who are better than him in terms of stats.
I agree. Now he's found the right style.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
so
right.
So now you look at it as to why we're renegotiating a contract with him, not only because he's been linked elsewhere, but mostly because he's actually on backup striker wages. That's the situation.
Yeah.
He is nowhere near up there with any of the top earners at the club.
Got it.
He should be, surely, because what everyone else is going to be talking to him about is going to be double, if not more, than what we're currently paying him.
Mm.
So he deserves a new contract. There was rumours about it at the end of last season, and we did the extension, and I think he got a pay rise, but I think now it's time to do that. Now, why are we talking about him? Because for some unknown reason, Man United fans and the journalists and the media seem to still think that they are the European juggernauts of the past and can just pluck a name out of thin air and go, come to our club, and they'll go, oh, yes, please, I'd love to come to the biggest club in the world. And it's genuinely making me laugh that all of the journalists are still talking about Man United just because they like Mateta. They seem to think that he would come to their club on a cut price deal. I'm seeing loads of cut price deal. Sorry, Man United fans. Why would we sell you our best striker we've had in years on a cut price deal we're not going out of business. We're thriving right now.
It could be argued that it's not going to be a cut price, but if the player wants to go, that's always the issue that we've got. And
yeah.
I'll talk about those problems for Brighton in a minute. But
yep.
it's yeah, like you're quite right. So Man United have been touted. Anybody else?
Marseille, Villa, and the latest one is Juventus. But funny enough, the only one that's really gathering, because I try to not bring these stories to this forum, that I only bring the ones that I believe are gathering momentum and have got any kind of thing in it. And I think that I do believe that at the end of last season, Man United or agents and such contacts of Man United might have whispered in Mateta's ear.
Yeah.
And I do believe that Mateta might have listened and maybe done some form of light encouragement. I'm speculating. Mm. I believe that Mateta is having the time of his life, and it's very visible to see that he is the life and soul of that first team and is playing his best football in the system that suits him with a manager that he loves and with genuine people that he likes to be around. That is the vibe. And I know everyone wants to believe that this is lovely fairy tale, but I think it's really apparent and obvious to see this guy is thriving under our current system and has the opportunity, hopefully, to continue that in Europe next year. So, yeah, from my perspective, Man United is the one that are pursuing this. Why would he go there? Lower league positions for the last two seasons than Palace. No European football. And to be part of that utter mess that's going on right now, I think the only reason he would go there is for traditionally a big club
and money
status
well.
And money.
Money,
yeah.
Possibly. If you look at his age as well, he's 27 years old.
Yep.
He's, as you said, if he's on a two-year contract now, he's got another 12 months before his price drastically drops.
Mm-hmm.
So from a club's point of view, they obviously are going to want to renew his contract. But from a player perspective, you're quite right. He gets to play in Europe next season in a team that he's already number one in. You know, he's already going to be the lead striker. You know that for a fact now.
Yep.
He's enjoying his football, clearly. He's winning trophies, clearly. So 12 months with a Europa League journey, I think he's going to be foolish to move right at this moment. Whereas in 12 months' time, it's a completely different bargaining chip then, isn't it? If he doesn't renew his contract, it makes more sense then for the player's side of view, and that's all I'm talking about.
Yeah.
From a player's point of view, he's 28 years old. He's got 1 year left on his contract. The choice of clubs may be even broader then as well.
Yeah, and let's not forget that this guy played in the Olympics for France.
Yep.
So it's tough to be French.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's lots of competition.
They could pick four teams that could beat most teams.
Exactly. But he is on the cusp of that team, right? He's he's in and amongst it. Same as Elise, right? You've got them two players, right, that are struggling to get into the French first team. It's like, it's mad. It's utter madness. Mm. But anyway, I think my verdict on this, to clarify,
let's get this clear.
Retain at all costs.
Right, okay.
So, unlike Eze, like I said last week, retain at all costs, make him the most highest paid player at the club and keep his value rising.
Okay, let me just ask you a question on that though.
Okay.
Retain at all costs, he doesn't sign a new contract. He doesn't want to sign a contract now. He's not even going to talk about it until next summer.
Yep.
Do you still retain him?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then we have another chat next year once we've won the Europa League. Stop laughing, it's going to happen.
You're not even in it yet.
Well, to be fair, we weren't really in the FA Cup when I said we were going to win that, but you never know.
Will we ever stop? When are we going to stop talking about the FA Cup?
Once we've won our next one.
Oh my God, that could be a long time.
It's all right, you can talk about winning something when you do.
Ouch.
Anyway, over to you now, Neil. Who's the player you're going to feature today?
I think there's only one, really. I was tempted to talk about him last week because it's the first name that I think of when I think about someone possibly leaving. João Pedro.
Don't feel like that's a possibly, Neil.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, João Pedro, it's all over the news. Even Fabrizio Romano's talking about it. There's a very strong indication that he will be leaving this summer. From all gossip that we get and reports we get, it's clearly there's been a falling out a little bit as well. I think we talked a few weeks back about, obviously he got sent off in the Brentford game very petulantly. In my perspective, he had shown frustration in the weeks before that as well, which starts me to think that maybe conversations were starting to go on then as well.
This is the guy that had the bust up with Van Heek, right?
There you go. So that's like, what I was going to get to. Yeah. So after the Brentford game, he obviously got banned for 3 games because it was a straight red for violent conduct. And then the week that he was supposedly start training to get back into the team, there was a fallout with, or a fight, an actual fight in the training ground with JP. So yeah, it's not been looking good. Hörsler had the opportunity to play him at the last games of the season, but he didn't. So I think that pretty much sealed the nail in the coffin, I think.
Sounds like it's a bit of a prerequisite, this one, doesn't it? If you've got people who want to come in for him, he's done well for the club.
Well, yeah, let's look at that then. Yeah. So João Pedro, as a overall player, so we signed him back in, we tried to sign him, I think, in 22, but we actually got him in August 23 from Watford. It cost the club £30 million.
That's actually quite a lot for you to pay.
At the time, it was our record fee.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah. And we were like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, like, that's a bit of a statement.
Exactly, yeah. And so I was like, well, that's a lot of money to pay for. I think he would have been 21-year-old then as well. Mm. But obviously he'd had quite a long career at Watford because they'd got him into the team from sort of 18, 19 years of age. And you know, he came in, he's a very good player. He's a forward. I wouldn't call him a striker. I would call him a forward in that he can play at the number 9, he can play in the 10, he can play sort of on the sides if he needs to. He's just a really good attacking player, got great feet. This season he scored 10 goals in all competitions, 7 assists. In the last 2 seasons, so since really he's been in the side fully, he's had 28 goal involvements in the Premier League, that is only. When he signed for us, we signed him on a 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, he's still got 3 years left, which is quite a lot on the contract.
Yeah.
So there are quite a few clubs, as you can imagine, interested in him. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of a premium now for Brighton players as well. I think people are starting to see that although you sort of joke about the whole feeder club for the big clubs and stuff, and we only sell when we want to sell and we only sell for the right money. But in our heads, that's part of our model. We're comfortable with selling a player once we are happy to sell the player because we feel that we've got someone else to come in. And there's been several clubs touted as being interested. I think Arsenal were interested. Liverpool are still interested. Chelsea.
I was waiting for that. Yeah.
Chelsea are always interested in anything Brighton are doing, but I don't believe they'll go anymore because obviously they've just signed Liam Delap. So I think they're out of the running. Arsenal sound like they're going to get Benjamin Šeško.
Who's that? Sorry? Say that again?
Benjamin Šeško.
Okay, yeah.
From RB. So. I think it's Liverpool. They're still be interested and they're probably just waiting to see.
Does he get in their team then?
What, Liverpool?
Yeah, does he get in their starting lineup?
No, I think he gets in their squad. Yeah. But I think if you think about the fact that they're probably going to get rid of Darwin Nunez.
Yeah.
They've got Florian Wirtz coming in. I think they're looking at a much more fluid front three now in the way that they're going to play moving forward. So I think there's a possibility, yes, absolutely, he could work his way into that. The most concrete lead that seems to be coming about is Newcastle. They tried to sign him before we did. Fabrizio Romano even gave it a here we go back in August 2022. Right at the last minute, apparently, it was Newcastle that pulled the plug on it because they got the opportunity to sign Isak right at the last minute.
I feel like that was a better decision. Oh,
clearly, you know, absolutely. You know, so it was the right decision from Newcastle. But I think what that also shows is that there was obviously a connection there straight away. They showed that they wanted Pedro at some point. And now there's a lot of talk about Newcastle wanting him and that they're actually looking at it from a perspective of maybe a left or a right winger forward to come in and play almost alongside Isak from time to time. So very much like Callum Wilson was their sort of second striker. But then you look at it on the player side and there's all this gossip going around that João Pedro doesn't want to move unless he is the number one, number nine, if that makes sense, that he's a first choice striker. Now, I'm not sure you can argue that he's going to be a first choice striker unless they do something different at Newcastle because Isak is starting all day of the week. The only thing I can see is if Isak is on the move somewhere else and the merry-go-round goes on. So I don't know. There's got to be clubs
looking at Isak right now,
well,
right?
Well, exactly. So, or the other way around with João Pedro, something's going to have to change from his perspective. Yeah. If the club is big enough for him to come in and he's okay fighting for his spot or, you know, something, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, I think it comes down to Newcastle, how much money they've got to spend if they want to pay for it. And then maybe a little outside choice that maybe it might be Liverpool. And then possibly there are international, other clubs in Europe or whatever looking at him. But ultimately, from a club's point of view, from Brighton's perspective, my understanding is that they're quite comfortable if he wants to leave this summer. And that's a struggle. Going back to fight or flight, and as me in the boardroom, if it was my verdict, my decision...
What would you do, Neil? Tell us.
Do you know what? I would be happy to sell for the right price if he wants to go. I don't want to upset the equilibrium at this club, in this team, in this squad. I think we buy players, give them the opportunity to shine, and part of our model is to say, if you want to go, we're not going to stop you. If you don't want to stay here and have this great club, there haven't been many players that have left Brighton and done better. The only ones that have done better are the absolute true world-class talents that we always knew were going to become better anyway, which was McAllister. Caicedo is on his way, you know. But ultimately,
it's taken him some time, though, since he's left you.
Exactly. You know,
I think that you are making money out of a good system and a good style of play and a good camaraderie. And I'm not sure. I've always thought this, that the ones that you sell for them big price tickets, I don't think that they are as good as the last season they played with you in whatever setup they're playing.
Yeah, the expectation changes. Suddenly, you've got this huge ticket, this number on your back, and suddenly the expectation at a bigger club is very different.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, I think, as I say, I'd be happy to sell for the right price.
What is that right price, Neil?
Wow, this is interesting, isn't it? Because he's got 3 years left on his current deal. That's a lot.
But you don't want him, though.
And that's the problem, isn't it? It's very public. And I think that's why there's so much out there, because the player's side is making it clear that he's for sale so that the price gets argued. I don't think you should play poker with Tony Bloom.
Okay.
I think if the right price isn't met, João Pedro will be a Brighton player come the pre-season. I think unless someone hits the exact number, he's not going anywhere. And I mean that even if Fabian Hursler doesn't want to play him, he'll sit and wait.
What's it? Sorry, hang on. So you think that he's going to be training with the under 21s and, you know, almost like a Sancho situation where it's like, like Pedro knows he's not wanted there potentially going forward and he's not the first choice now?
We wouldn't know what goes on because it won't get out unless João Pedro says it, which obviously he might. But Brighton, if they don't want to sell for the money that they think he's worth, they won't sell.
Mm.
It will happen. Like they'll get the money, the number that they want, or they won't sell him. I just think what they're waiting for is a situation where right near the end of the window, there's one or two, or more importantly, two or three clubs that want him. And when it gets to near the end of the window, those numbers, they suddenly go a lot higher.
Oh, they do, because people panic.
Yeah, exactly. So look, price-wise, if we double our money, and don't forget we paid 30 million, if we double our money in two seasons, I think that's good business.
Yeah, for 28 goal involvements over two seasons. And scored 10 last year.
And his age, he's 23 years of age. He's got plenty more. He's playing for Brazil now. Like, there's so much more to come from him that I just think anything above 60 million is probably the price in my head. And I believe that's probably where Tony Bloom thinks it is as well. So we will see. But from my point of view, it sounds like he's not going to fit anymore. So off you go. Thank you for what you've done, apart from the last five games. Thank you for what you've done. It's time to move on. Off you pop for 60 million. Thank you.
Off your pop.
Off your pop.
And that was Fight or Flight.
Oh, yes!
What are we going to talk about next?
I think we should do transfers.
Oh, very good idea. The incoming transfers, the fun bit.
And you know what? This is the time in the podcast where I dread.
Why is that?
Because I think that to summarise, I don't think I've got a future as a potential commentator going forward, because my ability, as I'm sure a lot of you have noticed over the past 10 weeks now, I think we've been doing this. I'm not great at pronouncing people's names. So much so that recently, even for the club that I support, I've been trying to do some research to make sure that I am doing it correctly, because a lot of the commentators don't even pronounce some of the players' names correctly. Do you know how they learn to do that? They have, you know, when they do all of the, that day where they do the media.
Yeah, yeah, Premier League Media Day.
Right.
They get them to say their names, don't they?
They stand in front of a green screen and they get them to say their name in like four or five times in different speeds and different ways. And it's on YouTube.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know I could actually find them.
It's on YouTube. There's a whole YouTube of every single Premier League player's name.
And that makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah. So I was sat there the other day watching that with my son.
So in that case, who's right? When it comes to your central defender, so I think it's Lacroix.
Mm.
Or you say Lacroix.
You're right.
Am I?
I just can't pronounce it.
Lacroix.
It's Lacroix, yeah.
Ah, okay. I often wondered with that one. There's a few, though, isn't there? There's a few people, even the clearest.
Eze.
What? It's not Eze?
No, it's Ezza.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And he says Ezza. But once you've been calling someone something for so long, you're done.
So what about Palace transfers?
Right. Well, we've got a couple of people that we've been... In fact, more than a couple of people we've been
linked
with.
I'm sure there's lots.
Right. Now... As I said earlier on in the podcast, what we try not to do here is just repeat what we found on Google.
Yeah.
Like, we're trying to see what actually has some kind of substance behind it.
I understand.
So we've been holding off last week, really, talking about potential targets until we worked out what the substance was and where it was. There's an interesting one here.
Go on.
That's come up. Something I'm going to talk about next week, potentially in Fight or Flight, is about Gehi.
Right.
Been saving that one up because wanting to kind of see a bit more, but there is a belief that he is not going to sign a new contract, which isn't a shocker for me.
No.
I think we all knew that. So what is quite apparent is that the club is looking for new central defenders.
Yeah, of course.
And there's been a couple of people that have been linked. I quite like the fact that Palace haven't been linked with too many attacking players, which I think is a good indication of who we're thinking is going to leave.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Ousmane Diomande.
Mm-hmm.
Palace are very strongly linked with him across multiple media outlets. Supposedly, contact was made on Friday between the clubs,
right,
with no formal offer being made yet.
What club is that?
Sporting Lisbon.
Right, okay.
So he's also supposedly wanted by Man U and Liverpool and said to be worth somewhere between 45 and 50 million. So this would be a statement for us.
Oh, yeah.
Because very rarely do we dig into that kind of money. And that would, I think our record is somewhere in the 30s.
Right, okay. That's quite a big jump then.
Yeah, we'll have to have a look at that for next week. I think Benteke broke the record when he came to us at one point, and I'm not sure if we've broken it since then.
Right.
Anyway, who is he? Let's find out. He's a 21-year-old right-footed centre-back. He's out of contract to Sporting Lisbon next year. So now is the time for offers to go in. He's an Ivory Coast international, considered by many as one of the top young centre-backs playing in Europe. His stats are pretty impressive, Neil. In 31 games last season, he scored 2 goals, right?
Mm.
He's got a 93% pass accuracy, 61% long ball accuracy, and really, really good stats, without boring you with them all, on duels and tackles.
Yeah, I've seen him a little bit. I saw him in the Champions League. Obviously, he's still young. Like you said, he's 21, I think he is, isn't
yeah.
he? You said. And... yeah, physically, he's quite imposing still, even at that age.
Oh, he's a beast. He's being described as a beast in a good way. I think he's strong on the ball. He never gives up. But I had a little look at his montage reel.
Oh, I love that on YouTube.
Yeah,
you must find
it,
don't you?
Well, I found quite a few of them, actually. And it looks like he's got that never give up attitude, which Glasner, demands as a prerequisite,
sure.
actually. And also what I like about him, which is why I think Glasner's looking at him, is not only strong at the back, he's also a forward-looking defender. So he's looking at them forward balls, really suited to our kind of style of play. And I think quite a few of these people that we're looking at are just, you know, you look at them and go, you would slot in really, really well. Yeah, you wouldn't have to adapt too much as to what you're trying to do. And I think Glasner's given, he said that he's been quite open about the fact that he knows what he wants and he knows who he want to get and he wants to get them over the line quickly, which is part of our problem right now because it's whether we can get them over quickly in our current situation.
Yeah, what I would say just anecdotally as well, it's quite widely reported that Sporting Lisbon are a really difficult club to do business with.
Yeah.
I know of quite a few stories in the past where they mess them around quite a lot to other clubs because they're really difficult to nail down an actual price and get through the paperwork. It does take a long time. So it wouldn't surprise me if this takes a long time, this particular sale or purchase from your point of view. And also, I suppose you always have to worry, don't you, that other clubs don't swoop in and try and nick him and gazump him.
Yeah, Man United and Liverpool are meant to be hot on the tails.
I'm sure.
But let's see. I think, look,
sorry, so just to be clear, so where are we in the stage, do we reckon, what's been reported as to where they are in that sort of idea of trying to get him?
I think they're trying to work out a price.
So they're talking to the club?
They're talking to the club. Well,
that's what's been reported.
No official offer, but they're talking to the club.
To
get there. So I think we will potentially, by next week, we might find out where we're at.
Yeah, and also, I think the other thing to say with transfers generally, what you usually find is that the clubs will unofficially, let's say, talk to the players first to see if they've even interested in joining. So by the time you find out that a club is talking to another club, it usually means that the player is interested in the move.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really, really hoping that just like we did, as we spoke about last week, with Anderson going and Lacroix, whatever his name is, now coming in, like that was a plan that we didn't really understand at the time. And it sounds to me like this could be what's going on with Gaye. So, so that's one of them. And then the other one that I mentioned was Pavlovic. So he is an AC Milan centre-back. Another potential Mark Gaye replacement, 35 appearances and 2 goals, quite similar to the last player that we mentioned. He's a Serbian international, though, 45 caps, 4 goals. Now, he's been on Palace's radar for a while now. He's someone that we were linked with last year.
Right.
And this seems to be the current form, as I mentioned, when these names keep popping up.
Oh, absolutely.
At some point.
It shows a plan, at least.
Exactly.
You know, it shows method that they're identifying these players and, you know, where they have the opportunity to get contact and start to see if there's any opportunity for a purchase, they will. And people, you know, the clubs go back to those players because the players now know that someone's interested in them. So,
yeah,
that sounds interesting. Do you think, and I get that this is total speculation here, do you think it might be one or the other?
I've heard that we were in for a couple of defensive reinforcements this year because I think we probably need one more anyway. And if one's going, then I think two would be an option. But to be transparent, I think, you know, potentially we might only get one over the line.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, look, the Pavlovic is rumoured to be, we're rumoured to be preparing a £25 million bid.
25, okay.
Rumour has it, they think he's worth 40.
Yes.
And that's why we're not any further along at the moment.
I mean, even if you said, like, let's say 30, 35 million, if you went in the middle of that price, plus how much was it for the other chappy that you were talking about?
About 45, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at it from that point of view, that's a lot of money for two centre-backs. That's like, what, over 70, 80 million pounds. And for two players, that's quite a lot of money. I don't know whether they... Personally, I think it might end up being one or the other, but we'll see, I suppose.
I think it'd be one or the other. There's also some rumours, which I haven't kind of delved in too much yet, because I haven't heard them from multiple sources or from reliable sources. But there's a couple of championship defenders that we've been linked with at the moment as well. So common sense would say that we would stick to our normal plan of bringing someone up from the championship at the somewhere between the 5 and 10 million pound
more
mark,
economical choice,
and then maybe match it with someone who's got you. I think what we're saying here is international and European experience
is
what Glasner wants now going into this Europa League and so on. So I think potentially it'll be one and one as opposed to both of these two. But
sounds sensible.
I'd be happy with either of them, Neil. Tell me about Brighton, Neil. Surely you must be linked with hundreds of people.
It's quite a few, yeah. Same as you, really. There's quite a few. I think the three that I would probably just touch on. So one is Oscar Boscagli. Now, he's a French 27-year-old left-sided centre-back. And we made offers for him last summer. So he was playing for PSV. He had 12 months left on his contract. And we made offers, but PSV didn't want to sell. They were looking to go for the title, so they didn't want to sell him then. We went back in at Christmas time and made some inquiries, but again, they were very much, we want to keep him for now. So they lost out on the money there, but he's a free agent at the end of this month. Obviously, his contract is up.
Oh.
He didn't renew or do anything different. And most sources are reporting that Brighton, he's basically signed for Brighton already, i.e. so from the 1st of July, he will be a Brighton Hove Albion player. That's all the indications that we've got, but they're solid sources. It sounds like a done deal. And obviously, as I said before, we've gone in for him in the last 12 to 18 months, it sounds like we've done our due diligence and we've done our groundwork. So Oscar Boscagli, 27-year-old as well, mature, which is good for our very young team. Left-sided centre-back, free agent, but sounds like he's going to be joining 1st of July.
Sounds like that's something that was potentially done a while ago,
exactly.
Where the agent has kind of done a pre-deal there or something and let it run. But
yeah, and I think it indicates, I talked about it last week, where I wondered whether we're starting to look at the possibility that we might be changing our formation. We may be looking at going to a three at the back. Obviously, Dunk can't go on forever. There's talk this week that Igor might be leaving, who's our other sort of left-sided centre-back. Still leaves Webster, still leaves Van Heck. We've got the young kiddie we got from Derby as well, Cashin, who's a left-sided. I don't know what's happening with him. In the news, a little bit more of a sort of outside bet. Mm. There's a lot of talk about Diego Coppola. I hadn't heard of this chap.
I haven't.
He's an Italian right-sided centre-back, young though, 21 years old, much more in sort of Brighton side of the transfer market, where, you know, he's been playing for Hellas Verona in Italy. He's had a couple of really good seasons. He literally, 2 days ago, just got his first cap for Italy.
Oh, so he's doing all right for himself.
He's doing very all right, yeah. I'm not so sure this is going to happen. My understanding is, from what we've been seeing online, is that we've been in, had conversations with the club trying to agree a fee, trying to get in early, basically.
Yeah.
I think there are lots of other clubs, let's say bigger clubs, that are looking at him too and are probably just waiting for us to agree a fee. I'm not feeling too confident about that one. But the reason I bring it up is because, again, it's a centre-back. And I just think indication is that we're looking at the defensive side of the team, which makes sense, by the way. You know, we definitely need more reinforcements.
I mean, you couldn't name a defensive lineup at one point,
exactly,
did you?
Exactly,
didn't you have your strikers playing in defence in one game?
It wasn't quite that bad, but felt like it. But yeah, so the fact that we're looking at that, I think it indicates that possibly we're either going to a back three or we could see a lot more outgoings when it comes to centre-backs. Anyway, I move on. So they're the sort of the two that I know a lot about. And then literally in the last 48 hours...
Oh, breaking news, everybody. Breaking news.
There is a lot of talk online, relatively reliable sources, that we are in for a Greek 18-year-old wonder kid.
Oh, I can't wait to hear his name, Neil.
Yeah,
go
here
on,
we go.
Let's go.
Right. Charalampos Kostolos.
He's going to need some small font on the back of his shirt, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's got a nickname, but it begins with B, but I won't go into it. Kostolos. Now, I know a lot of things about football.
Yeah.
I didn't know this kid. I've looked into him.
Okay.
So, yeah, 18 years old, but he's played for Olympiakos. Last season, he had 30 appearances. This is 18 years old. 30 appearances, 7 goals, 1 assist, including he played in the Europa League as well for Olympiakos.
Oh.
And there seems to be a lot of talk about the fact that Brighton are, again, trying to agree a price for him ASAP. And that price is currently sitting around 40 million euros for an 18-year-old, Andy.
Okay. Clearly some kind of wonder kid, though. If he's, I mean, let's just put this into perspective, though. He's 18.
Yeah.
And he's playing for one of the biggest clubs in Greece. And
yeah,
he's also played in Europe.
Yeah, obviously he's had a good season.
They're clearly rating him.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of clubs must be looking at him, which is again why Brighton are trying to get in there as quick as possible, agree a price.
Mm-hmm.
He's a player that is a forward rather than maybe, he's played striker, he's played central attacking midfielder, he's played out on the wing. So he's just basically one of those players that has the skills to play anywhere, very much like João Pedro in that sense.
Ooh, a potential replacement then.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, if you look at it from that point of view, it makes sense that they're looking at these players, but he's 18 years old. He wouldn't have played in the Premier League. João Pedro was 21, but also he'd played for Watford. He'd played in the British, you know, in the English league. He was much more used to English culture. So I don't know if it's a replacement or not. My point is more that 40 million euros, which is what, 36,000 million pounds. I mean, that's a lot of money for an 18-year-old kid.
Who's going to be off the pace? Because he's coming from the Greek league, right?
So if we're paying that much money for a kid that we might not see much next season, all I can say is, we are clearly expecting a bit of money to come in, and we are clearly expecting players that played this season that maybe didn't gel as quickly as we were hoping to gel quickly, because we can't rely on an 18-year-old kid to suddenly be our miracle and be our central attacking midfielder that's going to pull all the strings and create all the goals. I'm hoping he's just another one to add to the list, you know, that in the next couple of seasons we won't put too much pressure on him. Now look, I'm talking about he's already signed. It hasn't happened. There's a lot of talk about the fact that maybe he's flying next week for a medical, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, it's got that far then.
It's got that far, is what the reports are saying. Now,
okay.
I'm a little bit sceptical. Again, I'm always sceptical because I'm always thinking, where's Chelsea? What are they up to? Where are they going to spend their money? They always look to see what Brighton are doing and then come in and try and nick the player or something. So we'll see. Of course, I hope we get him, because if Brighton want to get him, he must be a good player. But I hope that he's not, when he's signed, if he does sign, I'm hoping he's not looked upon as just Pedro's replacement. I hope he's just looked upon as another kid to join our ranks of, you know, very skillful players. We'll see. Karalampos Kostoulos. Hey, see what I did there? It might be completely terribly wrong.
So you can only be proud of yourself for pronunciation if someone celebrates it and no one has.
I haven't got a clue. So yeah, that's the three from Brighton's perspective. There's loads of others, but again, like you said, mate, it's out there at the moment. It's cowboy land. We don't know what's real and what's not, but these are the ones that probably seem like they're gaining the most pace.
Yeah. I mean, also, a lot of it can all be real, and you just don't know how it's going to play out. That's the thing, isn't it? All of these could be legit, but it's what they actually choose to pursue based on who's coming and going.
Yeah.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Right then, what else should we do? What's next, Andy?
Well, do you know what? I think it's time for a new feature.
Oh, okay, go on then.
A feature called The Nest Test.
The Nest Test. I like this one.
Not the most greatly known feature, because it's quite difficult to say quickly.
I'm glad you said it.
Yeah. So, as I said, it's now time for The Nest Test, where we discuss the younger players from Brighton and Palace and put them under the spotlight. Are they ready to stay in the nest and play a key role next season, or should they take flight on loan to spread their wings? Or even, is it time to set them free for good? It's about squad building, tough calls, and a little bit of ruthless decision-making from us, potentially. In essence, Neil, what I'm asking us to work out here is keep, loan, or sell. Who passes the nest test?
Nice, like it.
So, do you want to kick things off, Neil?
Yeah, I can do if
you
want.
Who are you going to pick?
Well, I appreciate that it's about younger players, so I have bent the rules ever so slightly, and I also appreciate this is week one and I'm already bending the rules.
I'm fine with bending the rules, especially given our situation at the moment. So, yeah, go with it.
Nice. See what you did there. The reason I'm picking this is because he's 23 years old, which sounds old for a Brighton player. Well, it does, doesn't it? Their whole squad is like 12 or something. But He's a goalkeeper, and that's why.
Oh, that's young for a keeper.
Exactly. Carl Rushworth.
Never heard of him.
I thought you might say that. Carl Rushworth, 23-year-old goalkeeper. He joined Albion in, I think it was 2019, from Halifax. So he was about 17, 18 when he joined. And he has developed in the goalkeeping world quite well over the last few years. He hasn't played, I think he's played a couple of games for Albion, but nothing in any sort of serious competition. But he's had loans to Worthing very first when he was very young.
Oh, local club.
Exactly. Then he went to Walsall. And then most recently, the season before last, he had an incredibly successful season with Swansea.
Okay.
Now, at Swansea, he was absolutely outstanding. He was their player of the year, both fans and players player of the year. So that's got to go some way for a goalkeeper to be named player of the season, for both the fans and the players naming him that. So two different awards he got, player of the season.
Well, he cleaned up.
His manager, Luke Williams, at the time said he was good enough to be the England number one someday.
That's a statement.
Exactly. No, absolutely. He's played England under-19s, under-18s. He's got a couple of caps for England under-21s as well. Last season was a bit of a disappointment because he was brought back. He went on loan again. He went to Hull City and he was brought back abruptly, mainly because Jason Steele got a shoulder injury, so he had to have an operation. They thought they'd bring him back in. And that I think, in some respects, probably slowed down his development because he sat on the bench most of the season, not really getting a look in because of Bart Verbruggen. He's still very young, as I said at the beginning, for a goalkeeper. But rumours are, and this is the problem, rumours are that he isn't wanting to sign a new contract. And to be fair, it's understandable. You're not getting a look in your parent club. You're not getting out on loan. You're sitting on the bench at 23 years of age. You want to make a name for yourself. What I've seen of him, we have got a really good goalkeeper. We have got a really good possible future star on our hands with Carl Rushworth. He's that good, Andy. And I mean that sincerely. If you saw him play at what would have been, 19, 20 years of age at Swansea, a championship club, he was spectacular. By the way, Swansea were playing good football, passing it out from the back as well. It wasn't anything to do with, because a lot of people say these days, oh, if he can't pass the ball with his feet, then we can't have him in the Brighton team. He's very good with his feet still. He's good enough, put it that way. But he's not getting a look in. So I understand why he doesn't want to sign a new contract. And that's the biggest dilemma in all of this. When we talk about the Nest test, what are we going to do with him? Well, I think this summer is a big summer for him. If we think of Bart Verbruggen, there are a lot of rumours. They've gone quiet recently, but there were a lot of rumours in the season that the bigger clubs were looking at him.
Okay.
I still don't think he's anywhere near leaving Brighton yet. So realistically, Bart Verbruggen will probably be our number one for at least next season, possibly the season after. By that time, Rushworth will be out of contract. So, dilemma. If he's not going to sign a new one, totally understand his perspective, but from the club's perspective as well, what do we do? So it's a really difficult one. I wanted to bring it up because I just want to put it on record that I think it would be a real travesty if Brighton lose out on Carl Rushworth. Because even selling him now, we're not getting any money really for him.
No,
he's not proven, you know?
Well, you've got to improve your own asset by giving him a chance on that big stage. And I think from my perspective with goalkeepers, it's really difficult with goalkeepers, right? Because you've got to give them a chance, but it's a massive risk to give them a chance on that big stage. So ultimately, most of the goalkeepers get given their opportunity by default because they're sat on the bench and due to injuries or whatever happens, they get given their chance on that stage. And I guess Brighton have got to take that risk, which is not necessarily to throw him into that number one, but to give him the confidence to be the number two and to have him there to be relied upon.
And I think that's the dilemma, isn't it? How much can you give him to make him happy enough to stay whilst also keeping the equilibrium in the squad and making sure that the defenders are comfortable with whoever's in goal or whatever? Look, verdict from my perspective, I would try my hardest to keep him. I would put him in goal for all the cup games, for instance. I would try my best to try and get him, obviously, to sign a new contract. But even if we don't, you've got to give him something. You've got to give him the carrot to make him want to stay as long as possible. Yeah. And by trying to give him either the cup games or telling him that The position of number one is not guaranteed for Bart, and you have every right to try your best to go for it. It's a really difficult one. That would be my chosen decision, because actually, if he then leaves with a free transfer because he's out of contract, then we've tried our best to try and keep him if we give him the opportunities. Having seen Verbruggen all season, he has an error in him.
Yeah.
He can't save a penalty to save his life. I'm not 100% sold on him. Like, he's still very young. Don't get me wrong. He's still the same age, I think, as Rushworth. They're both around 22, 23 years old. So there's not much in them. Even though Verbruggen's played so many more games, there's actually not much in age and maturity. Verbruggen's playing for the Netherlands as an international keeper as well, which is, you know, great for him. But at the same time, I think he's an okay keeper. I don't think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of developing still to go. So from my perspective, when I look at it, I think, well, Rushworth has got every opportunity to make number one. I don't know what the conversations are being had with Hösler, but look,
go on,
the question is...
keep, loan, or sell? What are you going for?
Keep, loan, or sell? I would keep no matter what. And if it runs out his contract, so be it.
Good. Okay. I like that. From my perspective...
Go on, mate. Well, who have you got on this?
We're going to talk about Rucksacki.
Oh, of course. What, who?
And that's my point, actually. This kid has been on the brink for a few years now of hitting the first team.
Oh, okay.
Let me try and explain who he is.
Yeah, go on.
He joined the Palace Academy from Chelsea in 2019 as a 17-year-old winger. He plays in the England under-21 team. He's made 8 senior appearances for Palace in the 2023 and 2024 season in all competitions. So he was called upon by Roy. He built on a good loan spell with Charlton in the previous year and scored 15 times there and registered 9 assists in 49 games. So he had a good one. And then he was loaned out to Sheffield United last season, played 36 games in the Championship, mostly playing kind of between 60 and 70 minutes a game, scored 7 with 2 assists. And obviously we know they had a good year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't believe he's the finished article yet. And still, even at Sheffield United, he wasn't a starter or for every game, or he was still being rotated, if that makes sense.
Playing in the Championship at that level, top of the Championship,
yeah,
that's a good experience for him.
No, no, it absolutely is. But this is a guy now who he needs to now prove his worth or move away. And I think the issue being, and this is where it gets interesting, because look, he's a tricky and skillful player, and he is exciting to watch, right? Yeah. So he does fit our DNA respect of what we're trying to achieve. The question is, though, does he fit into Glasner's plans? Because he certainly did fit into Roy's. Now, he's under contract until 2027. We turned down an offer of £15 million from Southampton prior to him going out on loan to Sheffield United.
Right.
So we clearly did believe that we wanted to keep hold of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just didn't think he was quite ready. Now, he has had a good year. Let me take you all the way back now.
Oh, hello.
Right, to pre-season with Glasner at Palace.
Right.
He was played. I sat and watched him play pre-season.
Okay.
He had a good pre-season, but prior to being loaned out, he, i.e. Rucksacki, asked to leave.
Ooh, interesting.
It is interesting. Glasner is quoted on saying, when asked about him, he wanted to leave. If a player wants to leave, it's better to allow it. If a player doesn't want to be here, it makes no sense to put chains over his arm.
Totally agree.
He has to integrate into the way that we are playing. If he does, the door is open. If he doesn't, the door is closed. That is quite a big statement to a young player. So what we're saying here is we all know he's a good player. It sounds to me like he wasn't embracing of the new things that Glasner was trying to do, which is actually probably now given how successful Glasner has been. Bearing in mind at that point that Glasner said that, we got ourselves out of trouble from relegation and ended up in the top 10 nearly last year. The year before last. We've now had another what I would class, as we spoke about last week, as a decent season.
Yeah.
Obviously achieved good things.
I can't remember.
12th and first in the FA Cup. So it sounds to me like Glasner isn't a fan. Rumours have it, and I'm seeing around, Southampton are still potentially interested in him. Sheffield United haven't shut the door on a permanent transfer. My verdict?
Go on, he's got, 2 years left in his contract. So what do you do? Would you sell him, loan him, or keep him?
Sell him.
Okay.
Do you know why? I think given that we're looking for people to play Glasner's system, if he don't want to do that, then what's the point of him being here? There's no point to continue to loan him unless we're sticking with Glasner, which I hope we are. So therefore, this kid is now kind of, he's not a kid, right? Yeah. We're running out of time with him. So I think we get the money. Technically speaking, it wouldn't have done him any damage being part of that Sheffield United team last year. If he was worth £15 million at the beginning of last year, he's surely still worth around that kind of money.
It sounds like it's the right decision. I agree with you, maybe, to sell him. I think also you've got to look at it from a club point of view. Club's moved on. Like, mate, the style's moved on. You're going to need a better calibre of player. And that's nothing against him personally. But yes, you've got to have a mixture of youth, but also you've got to sign some bigger, more qualified, more mature players now for Europa League.
It's just upsetting, isn't it? It's that thing where you're like, the kids come through the academy and like, yes, we got him from Chelsea, but he finished off with us.
Yeah.
And you kind of look at him and go, he's one of our own. And he did hit that pitch for the first time in the senior team, which kind of proves that whole process of, you know, the academy players playing alongside the first team in the training ground and all that. And then you kind of go, actually, mate, it's not here. You're going to go somewhere else and do that. And he will, I know he will be a good player. He will be in a Premier League team. I promise you that now.
Okay, so your decision is sell.
Sell because we can use that money to buy people who want to play our system. And we bought players who I think are actually better than him recently. When you look at SA and a few of the others coming up from the Championship who do suit our style. Sell.
And that was the Ness test. I quite enjoyed that.
That's good. I think, and we've got plenty of other players to discuss over the coming weeks.
Oh, look, yeah, absolutely. We're going to be here for the next few weeks talking about transfers, talking about who we should let go, who we should buy, hopefully, not just the people that are disappearing from our clubs. We're going to have loads more updates as well about everything that's going on. Next week, Andy, as well.
Yep.
I think it's probably worth us touching on the Club World Cup. I know you're really excited about it.
Sorry, a Brighton in that? A Palace in that?
Listen, we may at some point be in that. All we've got to do is win the Champions League.
Right. I didn't think it even came down to things such as that. I thought you had to be someone's mate to get into that, don't you?
That's part of it as well, and that's why I want to talk about it next week.
Okay. So that's us done for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thanks for sticking with us through the drama and debate.
So make sure you follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. And yes, we'll have more transfer chaos and club updates, plus a few other features as well. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Just search Seagull Eagle and come join the nonsense.
Got thoughts, questions, or want to tell us that we've lost the absolute plots? Drop us an email at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com. We'll speak to you next week. Until then, everybody, up the Eagles.
Seagull.